Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And, you know, sometimes it takes an outsider to notice what's really going on. My next guest wrote the novel that you may know called Americana, about a woman who comes to America from Nigeria and keenly observes the layers and meaning of race, class, and the fraught politics of middle-class America in so many ways. The author is Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. Her book, Americana, which is a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Fiction Award, is now out in paperback. Hi, Chimamanda. Such an honor. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And so many contemporary novels are introspective, but your characters are so observant of the culture around them. And for a lot of the book, the structure of American society in many big picture ways, and obviously you are not your characters, but as someone who came to America as an adult, do you think you can see things about this country that people who grew up here can't see?
Yes. but I think that's true for every situation. When my friends who are not Nigerian come to Nigeria, they say things that just make me step back and think, yes, that's actually true. And I hadn't thought about it because you're so immersed in your own reality that it's easy to not notice.
Indeed.
Things.
Yes. And when your main character, and forgive me, could you pronounce her name?
Ifemelu.
I-F-E-M-U-L-U, Ifemelu. When she comes to the U.S. for college, she's completely baffled by the way race and class are handled here. There's a scene where she's shopping in a store, and the clerk wouldn't identify her colleagues as black and white when she's trying to figure out who helped Ifemelu shop, the black one or the white one. She wouldn't say that. You know the scene I mean?
Yes. That scene was actually, it's very loosely based on an experience that I had, where I had gone shopping with a friend, and there were two helpers in the store. One was black, one was white, and both were dressed in black, both had very long hair. And we were trying to figure out which one had helped us. And so the cashier said, was it the one with the long hair? And I said, well, both had long hair. Was it the one in black? And I said, both were wearing black. And I realized, why can't she just say the obvious, which is, was it the white one or the black one?
Would that be easier in Nigeria?
In Nigeria, race is not, it's not a social reality, because most of us are black. So race is not an identity marker.
But if there was a white person there, you wouldn't feel
if
so.
If there was a white person, Nigerians would not at all be shy to say that's the white person.
And despite the history of colonialism, of global politics, the way they exist, just because it's an overwhelmingly majority black country.
Well, yes, but also I think it's not so much that the problem is that people are black and white. It's that those identities are weighted with baggage. And so in Nigeria, the idea of being black is not a negative thing. I think in the U.S., the reason people are so uncomfortable with just stating the obvious is that they're worried that, well, if I say the black one, what does it mean? Does it mean I'm saying she's... So then it becomes complicated and wrought.
And the book addresses the differences between American-African and African-American identity. Is it too general a question to ask you how the two groups see each other or how they're treated differently by white America? What's the core of this?
I would say the core is the history, that African Americans have slavery in their history and American Africans don't, because many of them have come from the continent in the past 50 years, while African Americans have been in the U.S. from the very beginning. And I think because those histories are so different, I think both groups experience race differently. And also, I think, are treated by America differently.
Listeners, any readers of Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, Americana, or anything else want to call in 212-433-WNYC, or anyone who just wants to react to the conversation, 212-433-9692, or you can post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll read some of your comments or questions on the air. How about second generation? Kids whose parents are African but who were brought up in America, caught between two groups, or do they get suddenly seen by outside society as, oh, just another African-American kid?
I think everyone who is dark-skinned in America is considered to be the same thing. I think America just lumps everyone into one category of black.
But we have done reporting on employers, for example, who will hire Caribbean immigrants who are black, but not their children because they perceive the children as African-American. They don't have the accent. And then the two groups, you know, signify, at least to many employers, different kinds of work ethics and things like that.
Yes. I mean, I think that's true. I think – but I also think it's a – I think it's a mistake. I think it's and it's too easy to generalize, you know. And often one is wrong when one generalizes. But
So there's a lot going on. It's complicated. And as the 2008 presidential campaign is going on in the book and things are looking good for Barack Obama, Efemelu notices Americans of all colors, even, for example, a woman from Haiti who she meets at a dinner party, seem to think racism is basically gone and all is well.
Yes.
There was a moment. I think it was more a media moment than a popular moment. But I guess something was out there. You were here by then, right?
I actually, when Obama was elected, I was in Nigeria. But during the campaign, I was here and I followed it very closely. And I think there was a moment, and I wanted very much to try and capture that sense of a kind of unreasonable optimism. And it was exuberant and and I say it's unreasonable because I think we all just thought Obama was Jesus Christ and he would change water into wine and all would be well. When a basic knowledge of American history would have made it very clear that this would not happen. So I wanted to try and capture that, just that sense of just, I think, really beautiful, magical hope that so many people shared in. But, you know, the idea of a post-racial America is just absurd.
Martha in Mattawan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Martha.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It was a comment that I had. I'm black, I'm African-American, and it was a comment that I had that was prompted by the discussion, your guest's discussion, of the fact that the salespeople were reluctant to describe people by race. First, the comment was that in reading, what I tend to find when I read constantly, I read widely. In novels, characters are almost never described by race, unless they are not white. White characters, Caucasian characters, are never described. They might talk about bone structure, they might talk about silky hair, or they might talk about the way the aroma or the aura of the person, but they never describe the race unless that person is non-white.
Right, the assumption of the majority as normal.
Absolutely. The other comment that occurred to me also was that your guest is right that there is a reluctance to describe people. There are times when I will describe myself as a short woman with curly hair and light brown skin. And you can almost hear the intake of breath when I talk about my skin color being light brown. I am. That is just me. If my brother had dark brown skin, that's the same as being blonde. No one is reluctant to say she's a blonde, she's a redhead, she has green eyes. But when I say I'm a brown-skinned woman, I used to be kind of heavy, so I used to call myself a plump, short, brown-skinned woman, you can hear the intake of breath. But there is nothing wrong with that.
Martha, thank you so much.
Thank you. I completely agree with her. I think, and that's one of the questions I think Americana asks about America, which is why? Right? Why? Why? I mean, I think historically it's really about the valuing of darker skinned people in this country. And so, you know, like Martha says, why can't we say dark brown, light
brown?
And I
think Americans are confused, black, white or other, about what's considered acceptable and what's offensive. You know, the whole affirmative action debate, for example. It's not okay to count by race to discriminate, but it's okay to count by race to include. I don't actually find that such a complicated concept, but a lot of people do.
You know, I don't understand why they would. Because if you're coming from a history where people were excluded primarily because of race, it seems odd to me that that somehow the solution to the problem is not supposed to include race. It just seems odd.
Jim in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, your guest was very exciting, and she answered much of my question. When I came from South Asia myself, I saw blacks, when I stopped in Kenya, they're very polite, civilized, as opposed to when you arrive in America, due to slavery, as she mentioned, their behavior is quite the opposite. So my question is this. One-third of African-American men are in jail right now, and the problems seem to get worse with Obama being as president. Would she set up a forum with the generations of Americans born here to transfer the jail population and give them complete amnesty, wipe out the criminal records if they choose to go back to Africa?
Well, there's a proposal. I don't know where that's coming from. Wipe out the criminal records if they go back to Africa?
I think that's terrible. I think the premise of that question, I'm sorry, I just completely disagree on so many levels. And I just want to say that I'm not at all suggesting that African Americans are somehow not civilized and well-behaved. I have many African American friends who are much better behaved than my Nigerian friends. And, this kind of conversation, I think, worries me because it's about making the victims the problem. You know, the problem is not that African American men have to be sent back to Africa. The problem is that America is a society that structurally has been just really dangerous to be for African Americans. We shouldn't be asking about sending them back to Africa. We should be asking about why, if a black man and a white man commit the same crime, the black man is more likely to get a worse sentence.
And you can't send somebody whose family has been here for generation upon generation back to anywhere else.
Yeah, of course.
We could send
everyone back to Ireland, back to England, back to Scotland, Germany, Sweden.
My guest is Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. Her book, Americana, is now out in paperback and a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Fiction Award. We're talking about some of the themes in the book. And how about white perceptions in America of Africa? Pretty much every white person who your main character, Efemela, meets in the book either thinks she must have grown up starving or eagerly tells her about their charity trip to Africa. Never mind that a lot of the countries people tell her that they've been to or donated to are thousands of miles from Nigeria, but it's the primary media narrative of, Africa in the United States, right?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I experienced much of that. I think many African immigrants do. When you come to the U.S., people just look at you and they immediately feel a kind of pity because you're African. And there isn't a question of the many Africans and the many experiences of Africans. And I wanted to try and play with that a little and sort of poke fun at it as well. Because it's mostly well-meaning, right? People come from a very well-meaning place. But
though from what I've read, you've had a little pushback from people who say your books are not authentically African, whatever that means, because your characters are middle class and college educated. So how do you counter that, what seems to me a ridiculous line of criticism?
Because I'm writing about the Africa I know. And I think that idea of my story not being authentically African comes from ignorance, and that ignorance is based on the single idea of Africa as a place that is poor, starving, has wars, all of those things. And there are many terrible things happening on the continent, but that's not the Africa I know. The Africa I know is the Africa I write about, which is a middle-class Africa of people who are educated, that's the Africa I write about. I'm not trying to make a point. I'm trying to write about what I know.
Lola in Weehawken. You're on WNYC. Hello, Lola.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi. I was going to say I am actually, I guess you would say, American-African or African-American. I was born in New York, raised in New York till I was 15, moved back to Nigeria to college, medical school, came back to the United States, have lived here since my mid-20s. This is a very interesting topic. It's an amazing book. I did read it. She's trying out to be one of my favorite authors from Nigeria now. So basically just wanted to say that the experiences she writes about were funny, they were interesting, and there were actually a lot of experiences that we people who are African who moved to America have experienced.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go right on to Rudolph in Queens. Rudolph, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Adichie. Thank you so much for the work you're doing for us, telling our stories. I have a question for you. you recently wrote an essay about gay rights in Nigeria. You were critical of the law that was passed by the government against gays, and you got a lot of negative feedback. Why do you think that Nigerians in Nigeria have a different perception about gay rights compared to Nigerians abroad?
Well, I don't even know that that's necessarily true. I think there are many Nigerians abroad who also are supportive of this law. This law that passed in Nigeria, popularly known as the anti-gay law, it's a law that criminalizes homosexuality. I wrote the piece because I was horrified by it and because I think it's important. I wanted to start a conversation with Nigerians of my generation. I think part of it is religion. Religion has so clouded the discourse on topics of this sort that very often it's no longer about humanity. It just becomes about, you know, the Bible said this is wrong, therefore we should stone them kind of thing. And I know that I got a lot of negative feedback, which, you know, I would write that piece again today if I had to. That's not. But for every, you know, 10 people who said, oh, you know, you're possessed by the demons and that sort of thing, one person has said, I'm rethinking this and I'm starting to see that it makes no sense at all to criminalize people for being who they are.
You okay with that, Rudolph?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Before you go, I do want to point out that Americana is a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Book Critics Circle Fiction Award, and that ceremony is this evening at 6 o'clock, and it's actually free and open to the public, so 6 p.m. at the New School. And I guess, Chimamanda, you now have thousands of additional people with a rooting interest in you winning that prize tonight after hearing you here today.
It's just really lovely to be on the shortlist. Winning is not that. I'm in such great company. It's such a lovely thing.
You're awesome to say so. And so last question, how did you feel when you heard Beyonce wanted to sample your TED speech on feminism in a song on her new album?
I really think that anything that gets people, especially young people, talking about gender inequality is a wonderful thing.
So we will leave it there and do a little sampling of that of ourselves. Beyonce, channeling Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, her book Americana. Thank you.
Thank you.
And economic equality of the sexes.
You wake up, housed up, run around in it, lost and on it, diamond.